Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our annual meeting, public meeting. Just a reminder before we get started here that this meeting is being audio recorded, and hopefully there's only one sound source coming through. We had some technical difficulties that I think have been fixed now. And so this is the May 1st, 2024 public meeting of the Clark County Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board. And I'm your board chair, Susan Cassidy, so I'll be facilitating our meeting, but please chime in as you need be. The screen that's directly in front of me is a little bit more shaded than the one to my left, so if I keep turning my head so I can see y'all better. First of all, do we have any community input? Okay, I am not seeing any hands, and so we might come back to that later if somebody has something that comes to mind. From our end, a logistical question for the board members that are here, and I believe I see Bob, and I see Lindy, and
that's it.
That's it for right now.
If they're speaking in the room, we can't hear it over here.
Oh, you're muted, Susan.
Oh, shoot. I'm muted. Oh, my goodness. Are you just now hearing me?
Yeah.
For
well,
the first
I heard
time.
The, like, welcome, but then after you asked about community input, then we heard nothing.
Oh, okay.
And now the echo's back.
Yeah, I can hear it in here, too. Do we want to pause and try to fix that again, or are we going to...
Because your mic is on while she's talking.
Yeah. While Kristen was talking.
Okay. So I think Kristen, once you're muted, will be okay. All right. So a logistical question for our board members that are present. Our next public meeting is scheduled to be in July. June will be a work group session. And July 3rd is the first Wednesday of the month, which is also one day prior to the 4th of July holiday. And so my question for all you is, do we want to go ahead and cancel that meeting as it might conflict with plans that you have scheduled for that holiday time of year? Lindy or Bob, and then Gabriella just walked in the room as well, so I can ask her. Want to think about that for a second? Hi, Gabriella.
Hi, sorry, I'm ready.
Oh, we just got started because we're having some
I
audio.
I will go along with whatever the group decides. Personally, I do not subscribe to traditional American holidays because that is when everybody else is loud and partying, and I do not like those behaviors or to be around them.
Thank you, Lindy. I appreciate your input, and I can relate to that. Bob, do you have any opinion one way or another? I'm taking July 3rd off.
I'll go along with the group, however they believe it to be, if they want to move the date or if they want to skip the meeting, that's fine by me.
Okay. Gabriella, do you have an opinion about
I like
July 3rd? Yeah, forget it, we'll take a nap. Gabrielle is laughing. She's going to speak any second.
Sorry, I'm just singing here in a minute. They made me laugh. I'll go with the rest of the advisory board if they decide that they want to push it to a different day. I'm not opposed to that.
Okay, Lori, I see you've joined us. I might have missed you earlier because of the room was too bright.
Sydney's there too.
Sydney. I thought this lighting would be helpful.
Actually, yeah, that's better.
Well,
thank you.
Are we talking about the December meeting, or I'm sorry, I need to get caught up.
We're talking about July. We're talking about the July meeting. Yeah, Wednesday, the first Wednesday of July is July 3rd.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not going to work. Most people are probably going to be doing holiday stuff.
She's just getting caught up.
Given the rhythm of the board, there isn't a whole lot typically that goes on in July. So we could probably, and again, this is just kind of going over the past few years' experience, we could probably cancel the July meeting, but in August maybe extend the work session a little bit. Because aren't we, in August, Trish, don't we start tooling up for legislative agenda and things like that because all of that's coming in? I know by October that all has to be done.
We're tooling up for the legislative agenda starting now.
I saw the agenda for tonight.
Yeah.
For some reason, I remember us in terms of thinking about maybe that had to do with oddities related to COVID because I was there was one year where I
no, you're thinking right, Lori, that we start talking about it in September and finalize in November.
Mm-hmm.
In typical years, that's kind of the rhythm and the time frame that works. This year, a lot of people are asking for legislative priorities and agendas early. So the Association of County Services has already asked for theirs, and our county lobbyist has also asked for ours already. So that's why we're getting into it earlier.
Is that possibly due to disbursement of funds related to the surplus that we've had the past two legislative sessions, you know, the capital gains tax, all that kind of stuff?
Maybe.
Who knows?
Everybody's
hopefully. That would be good.
Yeah.
Have additional money.
Susan, do you want to ask Sydney, too? Sydney's here.
Okay.
I would be fine in July.
Okay. And so, for me personally, I don't even know where I'm going to be July 3rd, but it's likely not going to be Vancouver. And then I see it's raining board members now. We've got Amy, we've got Sydney. Any insights from you?
I'm good with the rest of the group of moving it or not having it, what have you.
Yeah, I think it's going to be hard.
Yes. Yeah.
Amy, you're muted if you were saying something.
I missed the first part of the question.
Do we want to cancel our public meeting, board meeting for July, as that will be Wednesday, July 3rd?
Yes, I will be out of town. I'll be in Philadelphia at the National Education Association Conference.
Okay.
So that's where I will be.
Okay, so to kind of summarize what it sounds like is we've got about half of us are neutral, and a few of us are not sure where we're going to be or pretty sure we're not going to be anywhere near here. And so I propose that we go ahead and cancel our July 3rd public meeting, and we will resume our public meeting starting September 2024.
No August.
Work session.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. We will continue to have our work session in August, though. All right, I see a thumbs up. Okay.
Do we need to vote that as a motion? No? We just vote?
Do
yes.
We need to vote?
Okay,
I don't know. You could vote. Yeah,
oh.
Why not?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Okay. So all those in favor of canceling the July 3rd public meeting, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thumbs up. I see a thumbs up.
Aye.
I see head nods. I see ayes. Okay. Opposed? All right, it is official. Our July meeting is canceled. Our next item on our agenda, unless there's somebody that's joined us late that has community input, don't see any hands. DD Ombuds, Noah Seidel is here. Oh, I haven't seen you yet, but I know you're here. And for those of you that are not in the room, we got swag here. We've got pens, we've got post-it notes. I know. Now you're jealous.
Sorry, guys. You missed the... Everybody was on Zoom missed the slide.
I'll take it all.
It's a lot over.
Hello, can you all see my screen?
We can see your screen and hear you.
Great. So, hello, thanks for having me. My name is Noah Seidel, and I use he, him pronouns, and then kind of in the description, I have black hair, I'm white, 35 years old, I have a physical disability, cerebral palsy, and I have black glasses. So I am the Region 3 Developmental Disability Ombud, and then tonight I'm just going to give a quick kind of 15-minute overview of the Ombud, but I have longer presentation that goes into more detail about our office and some videos. And I did leave some slides that the folks who were there in person have. So I'm just going to give a quick overview about what our office does, who we are, a little bit about myself. So I cover Region 3, where Vancouver is in Clark County. So I cover from Pierce County all the way down to the border with Oregon, also up the coast, so the peninsula of Port Angeles, Port Townsend. And then we have another regional ombud who covers King County and north, and then ombud who's in Spokane, covers the east side of the state. Then we have a state ombud, Betty Kuderman, and a self-advocacy educator that does training for self-advocates and also helps us with resources in plain language. And about me, I grew up using DDA services. I went to the University of Washington, studied political science and disability studies. That's just a little bit of my background. So today, I'm going to talk about our office, and I'd like to give some reminders. If you have an issue that you want to talk about, it's confidential. We can meet offline. I have my contact information. We can talk about then. Also, we'll be talking about things that cover abuse and neglect, and I know that can be triggering. So if you do want to meet afterwards and talk, that can also be arranged. I'm going to talk about services and DDA. Each person who receives services is individualized based on that person's assessment. So if you have questions that are more specific, I might not be able to answer them because I don't know what's in that person's plan, what services they receive. Our office believes the person when they say that they're disabled. If you identify as having a developmental disability or a family member does, you can talk with the office. We don't require documentation. If I'm using any languages or words that you don't know, please feel free to ask questions. Our office or professional where they found that, we don't have all the answers. The service system can be tricky, as most of you know, which is probably why you're involved in the advisory board. So it's something we're still figuring out. And if you have any questions, feel free to raise your hand or put questions in the chat. I'll try to monitor that. So what do the ombuds and what do we do? Just some history. Our office was created in 2016. So we're a relatively new office. Some of the other ombuds offices have been around for much longer. Our office was created when there was a woman, her name was Laura, and she had state-provided caregivers who were paid through DDA services, and she unfortunately was being abused and neglected by those people. So the state legislature brought together advocates and DDA to talk about abuse and neglect, and they found that abuse and neglect happens to people with developmental disabilities in our state. And statistically, 7 out of 10 people with a developmental disability will be abused in their lifetime, unfortunately. Mm. So our state passed a law and it created two things. It created what is called a CAMP case management. So the DDA case manager ratio is fairly large in Washington. It's about 1 to 70. And they created, and those case managers visit people once a year. It's like the amount of time that they have to visit by law. But enhanced case management, the caseload is about 1 to 30, and the case manager visits the person every quarter or every 3 months. So more visits, more eyes on the person, making sure that services are being delivered. And the state also creates the DDA ombuds. Your office started work in 2017. So we are contacted through the state of Washington through the Department of Commerce, but our office is run by Disability Rights Washington, which is a private nonprofit, which is our state's protection advocacy organization. So every state in our country and the territories have a PNA, and Disability Rights Washington is the one in Washington. We work with people all over the state, and we are independent from the service itself, which means we don't provide any state services. We're not providers. We don't get paid by the work we do. It's just through commerce, so we're independent from all the service systems. And we protect confidentiality. So that means if an individual or family member comes to our office, they really direct the work that we do, and we provide confidential. So we don't tell other providers, other organizations about who we're working with, unless we have a record to do that information. So we can work with anybody in the state of Washington who has an intellectual developmental disability, who gets state services or wants to know more about eligibility for state. So part of that complaint we receive are people who are not yet receiving services but need help navigating the eligibility process. And we can visit and work with people anywhere they live, and especially people who are living in their own homes or their family homes, supported living, assisted living facilities, adult family homes, and our state institutions. So how do we help people? We help protect a person's ability to make their own choice. We take direction directly from the disabled person or their family member. So it's not how I want to resolve the complaint, but it's really what that person or family is looking for. We are private, and we're not mandatory reporters. So part of our work is taking cues from the individual, which means that we don't automatically report to RCS or APS or DDA, unless we see a huge neglect firsthand, then we make sure it's recorded. We try to resolve complaints at the lowest level possible. That can be working with DDA case managers, direct staff service providers, to try to resolve that process. We know the services are complicated, so we try to help people navigate their services. What does it mean to be on the IFS waiver versus the CORE waiver? What is supported living versus living in an adult family home? How do you access respite care? So, like, those type of questions. We try to help people advocate for themselves. So when we attend meetings, we help people speak up or help them feel comfortable speaking up. So then, if we have complaints or questions with the teacher, they could reach out to our office, but they might be able to resolve it themselves. We encourage the system to work how it should. So sometimes everything's in place, but for some reason the services aren't happening. Sometimes it's just making sure that the system is working. And then things we can't do. We can't give legal advice or give legal counsel. So if somebody is appealing a ruling or needs legal support, we can't help them. We can help refer them to another agency. We can't fill out forms for people, but we can assist. And the other thing is we can't make DDA do what we want them to do sometimes. We can't just have a law change. We still have to go through the legislative process, which we're all going to talk about later. So if we want to change something, sometimes there is a RCW or a LAC for many actions, but we still have to go through that same process.
You
want to
shut
it? We can give recommendations for changes, but it's not always a thing. So now I'm going to talk about the different types of work we do and give some examples. So the first type of work is called information and referral. So this is when somebody doesn't really have a complaint, but they just need help finding resources or information or knowing how the system works. So this example on the screen is about these who may go along, is having issues with his landlord, being discriminated against because of their disability. They won't make changes. A landlord doesn't want to leave the apartment anymore. and he needs somebody to help him advocate for his rights and legal assistance so he doesn't get evicted. So again, like how we can't provide legal support and we're not healthy experts, we might refer somebody to like a free or low cost legal organization. We might refer somebody to a trans rights organization, and we might sit in on meetings with that person in those organizations to help them. Or it could be seeing what type of services would help with like residential. Maybe an adult family would be helpful or supportive living at that point. We can talk about how to get connected with those services. The next set of work we do, and this is kind of the bulk of some of our day-to-day work, is complaint resolution. So this means that we work with individuals with developmental disabilities, their families, their legal representatives, to try to resolve a complaint about services. So this is when we're actually interacting with DEA or a service provider and trying to work on a resolution. So in this example, Sarah applied for DEA services for her 8-year-old daughter. Sarah was told by her daughter's caseworker manager that they would be scheduled for a functional assessment in 2 weeks. It has been 2 months and Sarah hasn't heard from her caseworker manager. Sarah contacts the DEA ombudsman to submit a complaint. The ombuds office calls the caseworker manager's supervisor and asks for a functional assessment to be scheduled. Sarah gets that functional assessment scheduled for her daughter, and if Sarah wants the DEA ombudsman to attend and support her, and her daughter to help it go well. So this is us contacting the DEA, asking questions. Part of our authority is we can get records and submit complaints to the DEA. So we work with people who need to get assessments done, or because of their eligibility, they need support, walking through the process or getting a call back from their case manager. Sometimes the case manager changes and that person kind of gets lost, doesn't know who to contact. So we can help do that. And then another part of the work we do is long term. So this is when we go out and visit people where they get services. And we do this in 2 ways. One way is we just go out and visit throughout the state. And also what we can do is if somebody gives us a call and they want us to go visit a relative or a family member or a friend, we can go and do visits. So in this example, like a person, and all these names are changed, is like Lucy has supportive living, and we hear that she's not being treated by her housemate, by the provider, or the housemate and the provider. So we can go out and schedule time to visit them, view the house, talk to her housemate, review plans, check on the condition of the home, try to resolve any complaints that she might have. So as that's going, we do supportive living, adult family homes, and the 4-state institutions. And then we take the information we receive in complaints and from monitoring, and that helps us write our reports and do systemic advocacy. So we've written some reports. The first one we did was called the Edmund Crisis. And this was about what happens if a person or their provider goes into like a crisis like, and they need more extra support, what happens. And unfortunately, that led us to our second report, which is called Stuck in the Hospital. And that's just people with developmental disabilities who are in hospitals, both youth and adults, who are there for weeks, months, and we've even worked with people who've been in a hospital for over a year without a medical need, but they can't find a provider or basically discharge back into the family home. And that's an issue that we're still working on. We did a follow-up report just about youth who are in stuck in hospitals and youth who are going to be sent out of state to receive services. We've done a report around improving services for youth with IED or in foster care. And that report actually led to legislative change where now there's liaisons between UCYF and DEA, and youth who are getting UCYF services can enroll in DEA. There used to be a big gap between those services. Same with the hospital report that has led to some changes in how supported living tracks numbers and other providers. And then another report we've done is called No Way Out, and this was an introduction to the Community Protection Program. And this is a waiver service that is for people who have done a risk assessment, and they get put on this waiver, and this requires them to have one-on-one 24-hour supervision. But we saw some issues with this where people are getting taken away and there should be a path to graduation. And we saw that a low number of people were graduating. And youth were just turning 18, between an 18 to 22 age, were getting referred to community protection programs without getting the resources to how to look at this in the community and then not graduating. So that is a quick 15-minute overview of what our office does. This slide has our info and our website. If you go on our website, we have our videos that explain our office. We also have brochures in 7 languages. All of our videos are in English, but they're also in Spanish and Vietnamese and Chinese, and they're the top 7 languages in our state that you can have them in subtitles. We're trying to do not just language access, but language justice, where all of our materials are in multiple languages, so people don't have to ask for that. So we can outreach to more communities. So all of that is on our website. And if any groups want a longer presentation or more details, I'm very open to you. Yeah, thank you for inviting me tonight.
Thank you, Noah. That was super helpful information. Does anybody have any follow-up questions, comments for Noah while we have him here?
I have a question. Noah, did you say, and thank you again for coming tonight, did you say how the report topics are determined? So is that part of the DD Ombuds charter to identify emerging needs and summarize into reports, or does the legislature ask you to do those?
Yes, so that's a great question. I briefly covered it, but I was going pretty quick tonight. So our reports, the way we structure them are kind of based off of our monitoring and our complaints. So we track the complaints that are coming in and we categorize them and same with when we're going to monitoring and seeing issues. So our first one around the second, the hospital and deadly crisis, it's because we were getting calls from people who didn't know what to do. Say a mother had to do a knee surgery. There were times where their child with a developmental disability were staying in the hospital with them while they're doing recovery because they couldn't find an additional personal care provider. And things like that where a provider goes into a crisis or has to do something and all of a sudden that individual can't get services. And then we started getting calls from the hospital. And hospitals calling us and saying, oh, you're in your office. We have somebody here who has a developmental disability who perfectly fine to go home. They might have some behavioral supports they need or medication supports, but they're either not being accepted out to the provider or the family just feels overwhelmed and they can't safely take care of that person. So we were getting those type of calls more frequent than we ever expected. I think I've been doing this work for 10 plus years, and before I worked with the Ombuds, I didn't hear about people being stuck in hospitals as much. And then we did when we started this work. So that's how we guide it. And then we also do, on our website, we have stakeholder forums. We get information from the community. And we're out and about. We have a community summit next week, and I was at the town hall in Vancouver. That's me. So trying to be at events where people are to hear about concerns and then you follow. So the legislators don't ask us to do reports with me. They have asked us to weigh in on topics that are being talked about at the legislature. I'm a lobbyist, so I lobby in sessions. And sometimes it's uninvited lobbying, and sometimes it's them asking for info.
Excellent. Thank you for clarifying that. Any other questions for Noah? I have one really quick, Noah, you said that you're Region 3, so you're like Southwest Washington, to the coast, Olympia, all that. Is it just you that responds to all these, or how does, I mean, are you staffed with other people with Region 3, or how does that work?
No, so currently it's just me and the region. So, you know, part of our office was we were only given funding for 3 regional ombuds when our office started, which is not much. So if you think about the long-term care ombuds, there's more long-term care facilities, but they have county ombuds, and then they have volunteers who do, like, their monitoring type visits.
Mm-hmm.
So we've submitted, like, a 5-year plan where we're asking for more funding, more staffing to be in the community more to respond to complaints. So, yeah, it's me. We do have an office assistant that helps with intake, but typically it's, you know, it's the regional ombuds that are doing the complaint resolution.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a lot of work, but we try to, you know, work with CDA to also have the case managers, you know, be aware of the complaints to also hopefully be more active once they know that somebody's having issues.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you so much, Noah, and thank you for the swag here in person too. Got your phone number on there. Okay, so we're switching up a little bit. We're doing legislative update, and then we'll talk about our legislative agenda, because that seems to be how things should flow. So, Hattie, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Hi, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you.
Okay, great. I have a brand new work computer, and I was like, gosh, I don't know if my audio is working, so... Glad to hear it. So I don't have a ton of updates. The last time we met was the night prior to the last day of legislative session. And anyone who's familiar with legislative session, that last day is kind of full of haunting circumstance and people, the governor is signing bills and taking pictures and shaking hands and kissing babies. So not a ton to update on that. I was just going to say we did have a couple highlights for those who weren't there or who just want to go over a little bit of the highlights from what happened during session. So Senate Bill 5882, which was a governance group bill, passed. House Bill 1916, which was the funding for ESIT and kind of that funding fix. So our ESIT providers can get paid sooner rather than later. House Bill 2116, increasing the special education funding cap, and then the engrossed third substitute House Bill 1541, which established the Nothing About Us Without Us Act. So as we're looking forward to the remainder of 2025, we are just dipping our toes into campaign season, which will fully kick off on Monday, next Monday, which is what, May 6th. So May 6th through May 10th is candidate filing week in the state. So every candidate that wants to throw their name in the hat for any seat from cemetery district, mosquito district, all the way up to governor of our state, will go ahead and file during that time. This is a huge year for elections because all of the state representative and senator positions are up for re-election. And there are a couple that are retiring. There's going to be some big moves. Senator Linda Wilson is retiring after this year from the 17th district. And so that is creating an open seat that now represents Paul Harris, who is currently a representative position 2 in the 17th legislative district, is now running for state senate, which will then create an open seat for his position. In the 18th legislative district, we have Senator Ann Rivers, who was districted out of where she lives. She's up here in West Center, and she was able to finish out her term in the 18th legislative district, but she is currently living in the 20th. so she will not be rerunning. There are, I'm in the 20th as well, I'm here in Richfield, and we have Rep. Ed Orcutt, who is the longest serving representative in the state, and he, I haven't seen him announce his candidacy or his retirement yet, so we will see there. And I know there's been some speculation on the 49th that Sharon Wiley, Rep. Sharon Wiley will be retiring, but I have on good faith that that is not happening. So I guess we'll see what will be happening next week. The only other couple things I had here, I was hoping I would have them all ready for you all, but we've been super busy. Kate's getting ready to go to the Community Summit next week. But we do have a date for our candidate forum on developmental disabilities, and it is October 16th. It is going to be at 6 p.m. in person. It's a Wednesday at Geyser Hall. So I think it's just that next week after the employment awards, so that's exciting, and we can just invite everybody to our candidates forum. We are going to start working on, I'm going to start working on getting a committee together, so if anybody is interested in participating in the candidates forum committee, we are having our first meeting tomorrow, just Thursday, May 2nd at 11 a.m., and you can go ahead and send me an email or give me a call. I can put my contact information in the chat, and we can get connected, but we're going to start meeting on Thursdays. Every other week until probably after the primary election, which is in August. So, other than that, I don't really have anything. Does anyone have any questions?
I just wanted to confirm the candidates forum is October 16th, 6 p.m. at Cloud College, Geyser Hall. Okay, and then will you put your email in the chat? So that we can share that if anybody's interested in that thing, it could be the message.
Yes, absolutely. And we are planning to have some save the dates ready by next week for the candidates forum. So be on the lookout for that.
Any questions for Hattie? Anyone in the group? So I received from Kemah School District has a teacher, and Amy, you could probably confirm this for me, that I believe is running for the Senate. And he's a former member of the Clark County Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board. Amy, is that true that Adrian Cortez is running for state Senate? Did you see that?
Adrian Cortez is running, and he has the Washington Education Association endorsement. But he is a special education teacher. He works in a...
I don't know
exactly what they call his program, but sort of, what do they call his program?
Adrian is the IAP Inclusive Academic Program.
Okay. I was like, what program he has? But yeah, so I'm excited that I got to see him recently. And so I think that's an exciting development for someone who has a strong connection to the disability community and education, for me, in my heart.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions for Hattie? And Hattie, please stay with us, because our next agenda item could maybe use a little backup from you as well. The early childhood funding that you talked about, that it has been improved with the passing of the House bill. Now, that was one of our legislative conversations last year, was paying those providers in a more timely manner. So it looks like at least that paid off. So that's hopeful that our voices matter. And so now to any of the DDAB members who are present, anybody else that wants to chime in, we need to start talking about our legislative agenda for our priorities coming up. That's statewide, they're asking for those agendas, as you may have heard earlier, a little bit sooner. Normally we jump into this about September, but we're backing it up a little bit here. So, I'll ask Trish. Trish is going to chime in for us.
Well, I just have a question. Is that I have heard about these requests, and so that's why we're kind of bringing it up now. But I don't really know and wanted to kind of throw it back out to the group or Hattie or anybody else if y'all have any insight as to why we're getting these requests so much earlier than we have in years past. Lori, you mentioned that there was some funding excess surplus that maybe they were looking at. If there's other insight or ideas, I'd be happy to hear it.
Well, the only reason I'm aware of the budget surplus, and I think it's the second legislative session in a row, is because I was tasked as part of my work with WSU. I was tasked with working with a faculty salary task force, and one of the things that we uncovered in the course of our investigation is that the capital gains tax, which was implemented a few years ago, was actually starting to produce budget surpluses. And so this might be related to, you know, the earlier request for legislative kinds of directions. So if they are going to do a disbursement process, alleged, they want to go into session, you know, maybe having all of that already outlined. I don't know. That would be a rational way to engage surplus, but my guess is as good as yours, Trish.
Is Hattie frozen?
No.
Hattie, do you have any ideas why they're making these requests earlier? No.
Hi, this is Gabriela. So, as a member of SEC for State of Washington, all the legislators want to have an insight of what's coming up for the legislative agenda. That's why they're asking for the what the community is going to be working for. And that was in our meeting with SEC, with the ARC of Washington and the BDC.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Do we have our, what else? Usually,
we could share. I can share screen.
So typically, when we start this process, we look at the agenda items we had previously. Our goal is usually to try to keep it to three items. Sometimes those items have subtext in them, but kind of three main bullet points. And so Trish is going to pull that up so we can look at that and compare that to maybe what we're thinking about moving forward. Population growth is not slowing down.
No, we are the fastest growth.
Yeah.
Do you want to say that with your microphone on? They like to hear the banter.
Oh.
Okay, this is Gabriela. Susan says, population is not slowing down. So actually, we are the fastest growing city in the Pacific Northwest. We're number 40 in the United States, but we're the fastest growing, including California, Oregon, and Washington. King County is at 1.9% growth, and we are at 9.8 or 9.9% growth. So our community is like exploding in growth. And that's one of the reasons that we already didn't have enough funding for programs and services. And now we can really feel that even more with more community. And I can share personally that in the organization, as I'm here as a parent of a child, but as the executive director of Hispanic Disability Support of Southwest Washington, Pacific Campus, we have at least 5 new families growing. Just on Monday, one day, I got 5 families. No counting Tuesday, Wednesday, and still 2 more days to go. So that's what shows in the growth.
I was at a community meeting recently where they were talking about the growth that we've had, and that 60% of the growth has been people of color in our community. So that's, again, just another reason for the board's work around diversity, equity, and inclusion, because we need to be able to respond to the increasing diversity in our community.
That's correct.
I didn't raise my hand, but something I was thinking about related to just the educational setting that I work in, and reinforcing a lot of the ideas I see here, is an increased need. We're seeing a lot of social, emotional, behavioral disability, emotional disability, anxiety, depression, and very profound instances in the schools right now that are extremely challenging for families to navigate, and they're finding themselves without resources. And as we're trying to refer around understanding disability and understanding, you know, some of them are, we're finding as we're going through evaluation processes that it was maybe misidentified autism early on or other things. And so then they're trying to navigate getting additional support. I just see a backlog for, in our schools, we're trying to support families really immediately, but then as we're sending people out in the community to access support, they're encountering long waits and a hard time accessing professionals who have experiences with students with their really unique needs. And so I don't know specifically, I just think about, I know we've talked about, like, even how do we support families in crisis? And I think I see so many more families supporting individuals in really extreme cases. Even in my own program, I have 7 students who I serve. And this year, I have 2 of my families are experiencing very extreme emotional dysregulation in their home and having a very challenging time accessing enough support to feel successful. And so I know that's not anomalous, but I just think about how, I know Gabriella is talking about, we have more people, and I feel like within the people I'm serving, I even have more need for a lot of reasons. And I just want to make sure that as our community has more needs, that we're building more supports within our community, that our supports are keeping pace, and including employment and housing and lifelong supports. Just what we talked about, like dental and medical, and I think, sorry, one more thought on this, is making sure that the providers who our families are seeing have an understanding of intersectional identity, including autism and other disabilities. Because a lot of my students see primary care providers who don't have a lot of experience serving those populations. So it's meandering.
Yeah. And so
I have a clarification. I have a clarification question. So there's our legislative agenda that we put together as a board, and then there was a template sent around by Trudy. Are we supposed to take what's in here and put it into that template? I don't really understand how these two documents are supposed to interact.
Thanks, Lori. That's a great question. When we sent out the agenda, I did also include the Association of County Human Services draft agendas. There was one for ESIT and another one related to employment. And so those two were just for reference. So typically when we are looking at, you know, beginning the conversations around the advisory board's legislative agenda, y'all kind of want to hear about what other groups might be thinking that are related. And so that's just kind of a reference point. And certainly the advisory board is not beholden to what any other group is doing. You know, you all are here to represent what is needed in Clark County, and for families and people with disabilities in Clark County specifically. So,
I appreciate the clarification. I was confused.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's okay. So I apologize, I'm going to have to leave in a minute, but I, because I had the 2024 legislative agenda and all our other prior legislative agendas, so I will connect with you, Trish, tomorrow to get caught up on what I missed. I have some ideas for also some higher education supports. I know that that's not a complete focus, but it's also a focus that, you know, we've been moving forward in little bits and pieces over time. But I do apologize. I did have to leave. So, sorry, guys. And I will connect with you tomorrow, Trish.
Okay. Thank you, Lori. And so, being one who's been around for a while, that in the past, even though we try to keep it to three items, we kind of consider what we had and then see, is something else coming up as a higher priority, which, I mean, housing residential supports, lifespan services, maybe there's a way we can look at trying to merge those two items, maybe, like I said, with some subtopics in there, and then look at some sort of educational support and kind of in the context of a lifespan type service as well, where, so like Amy, you're talking about the littles. You've got elementary kids and, you know, Lori's talking about the adults, the college age, people. And then with that, we also, want to make sure that our kiddos that are transitioning out into the community are getting the supports they need. So maybe we want to, reframe our priorities around employment, lifespan services, and then education and, do, you know, K-21, K higher ed, whatever it might look like, to make sure that we get those topics in there. I do want to, just a second, Amy. I do want to commend everyone though. I know that a lot of us are here right now. Participation in the legislative meetings last year was amazing. I think we blew those folks away. How many of us were there to show up? Some of us didn't have a chance to say much other than introduce ourselves, but that we sent a powerful message, and I think it was noticed. Yeah. Okay, Amy.
Sorry, just one more quick. I mean, I obviously spend a lot of time in the educational legislative priorities, and I think about intersections of those things, and I wonder about things that are really in the back of my mind. Something that will likely come up during this legislative session is the consideration of vouchers in public education in Washington, which would, of course, not be public education. And I believe this is a nonpartisan issue, and I also believe that it would be detrimental to individuals who access special education services in Washington, specifically also people who live in small rural areas, or people of color. There will be minoritized populations that are disproportionately impacted by the addition of vouchers. And so I wonder how, and it was going to be a ballot initiative, but now the legislature is going to have to decide it, get the opportunity to decide it if there's enough signatures collected. And I think about how these sort of things, initiatives that come up and have the potential to destabilize entire
networks,
you know, keystones of services that many of my students utilize. It worries me, and I wonder if this isn't something that we might want to talk more broadly about. And with, and if you talk about including education, then it wouldn't have to be a giant statement, but maybe something that validates and should put our board believe that that validates that public education should be free and appropriate and for everyone, and maybe just reiterate that it is the paramount duty of the government to fully fund it so that equitably serves and provides opportunity for all students or something. And so, I mean, that's kind of meandering, and I just see there are a lot of threats that would undermine services to individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities.
Thank you, Amy. Anybody else have any ideas that are percolating up that you want to share?
Gabrielle.
Just because I'm on the side.
Go ahead.
Given the fact of the growth that we're having in our area, I know that, so we have advocated, well, I knew within county, but I don't know for how many years I have advocated for the funding for special education funds. And we're always short, no matter what. So I think that's something that we need to continue bringing that to the table, because even if other counties, like in Bellevue, they're at 11% on special education, we're already at the max. And it's not fully funded. So I would say that we need to continue advocating for that. And yes, employment and housing. Thank you.
Oh my gosh, my song is like,
yeah. Well, and the fact that the area is grown so rapidly that we're outgrowing our resources in all, I mean, ability to get jobs, you know, it impacts our education system. So it takes a toll on all the systems that we have in place. How far do we need to get?
Well, so it sounds like y'all have kind of some broad changes that you want to make to the agenda. I would suggest, so just some logistical pieces here for y'all to think about is that, you know, because it sounds like this is really great, robust discussion that y'all are having, so I really appreciate that. And I don't want us to, you know, try to rush to get something in place for right now. So just the logistical piece is that unless we reschedule, our next public meeting wouldn't be until September, because the board just voted to cancel our July meeting. So that does give us a fair amount of time and to do some work on the agenda and then come back with something at the September meeting to finalize. So if that's something that y'all wanted to do, we could work on that outside of this meeting and then bring back for additional discussion and hopefully to finalize in September.
Oh. Did you see Bob's?
Did Bob have
in chat?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see chat.
That is a good point that you bring up, Bob, about the proposed legislative items.
I think that we would look to, Darla couldn't be here tonight. She had a family emergency and we're grateful to have Hattie with us. And I think we might have asked, did we lose Hattie? I don't know because I'm sharing my screen. I don't know if I can see y'all. But I think that we would look to peace, you know, to find if there was specific legislation. You know, I know that one of the things that y'all mentioned was the REIT bill, but now they're not calling it a REIT bill anymore. So I think we need to update that language specifically. And so, I think that as we get closer, and perhaps in the fall, that we may have a little bit more idea of what might be coming.
Okay, are we going to call it? Yeah. Okay.
Angela wanted.
And so is there any other?
Yeah.
Any other thoughts before we close things down for the evening and just let what we talked about kind of percolate until we meet again? Okay, Trisha's sharing her screen, so I'm not seeing any hands or anything.
Let me stop sharing. And is there any direction that the advisory board would like to give me so far as taking what y'all have talked about and drafting something that you can react to in September? Or do you... How do you want to do that?
I am sitting next to Trish, and I know she was taking notes about everything we were saying. Yeah. So any exit instructions? Yeah. Okay. So I think our goal would be to be able to come back in September with something that we could have pretty substantiated, but put some finishing touches on. We will be together again in August, and we can always communicate via email and throw some ideas out. If there is no further discussion or questions or comments, Angela has something to share.
It's not about the legislative agenda. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. Were we still on legislative agenda?
We're done with that.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm sorry I'm off screen so you can't see me. Maybe I'll wave my hand. There we go. I wanted to request some support from the board for the upcoming review panel. We have two new applicants that have applied for to provide community inclusion services. And we have been doing some outreach to our community, but we need a couple of volunteers from the board to be on the review panel. And we don't have dates right now, but we're trying to recruit people and then hopefully schedule some time within the next few weeks to do a panel review. So,
how many?
Last time we asked for two. I think we're going to go about the same number. So, I don't know if there are any people present that would be willing to participate in that review. And if you want to think about it, email me. I was going to send out an email just after this to catch people who may not be present today.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I can be available to help. Do we have anybody else? Usually you try to do that during the workday.
Yeah, so during the workday is yeah.
Okay, so one more thing for y'all to think about, and you can get back to Angela if you can help as well. Okay, if there are no other items, we are officially adjourned at 6:24. Thank you for all your participation tonight. We'll see ya.